Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Marina.
Okay, I'm just going to tell everyone a bit about how we know each other. So Mark is a relative of my boyfriend, and his full name is Mark Andre Myers, and he is a distinguished professor at the University of California in San Diego. He's born in Brazil, but he's from Luxembourgish parents and has close emotional ties to this country. He is a material scientist and the author of 4 technical books and 400 papers. He's just returned from a very exciting expedition and is here to talk about his new book. I'm going to play one more song before we ask Mark a little bit about his recent expedition. So this is Plain White Tea's Hey There, Delilah. Bear with me. That was Plain White Tees with Hey There, Delilah. And we are here with Mark Andre Myers. I told you a little bit about him before the song. And we're here to ask him about his recent expedition and his latest book, which is about Luxembourg. He'll tell you more about it himself. But first of all, Mark, I would like to ask you to tell the listeners about your recent expedition.
Yes. In 1914, former President of the United States, Teddy Roosevelt, who is one of the greatest American presidents, who also created the national parks, the Panama Canal, he embarked on an expedition in Brazil and teamed up with Cândido Rondon, who was also a legendary Brazilian officer who had been opening the Brazilian West for many years. So that expedition was an epic event, and it was very dangerous. He did not know what he was getting into. He almost lost his life. He became delirious, malaria. He had a wounded leg that had to be operated on in the bush. And that expedition became a book called The River of Doubt. In that expedition, they discovered a new river, River of Doubt. And that river, that book, and that was published by Candice Millard. And when I finished reading that book, I looked at the book. When I closed the last page, I said, I have to do this. I have to follow on their footsteps.
And you did.
I did, and that was in 2 parts. Last year and this year, we went down the River of Doubt using just canoes and kayaks, and encountered the same dangers that he encountered, and we were able to overcome them. We were a group of 3. I teamed up with 2 Brazilian officers, the best officers mm-hmm. of the world, Colonel Angonese, Colonel Hiram, and we went down. We also had an American, Jeffrey Lehman, who is a cinematographer. We did the river last year, and it was extremely difficult. So this year I returned, and we did the part that they did on foot, which was on we went on horseback for 15 days and then crossed on foot the Indian territories, and we had a total of 1 month. And so now we basically completed and repeated the epic journey of Teddy Roosevelt and Cândido Rondon.
I think it's such a shame that people aren't exploring more, and that it's rare that you find people going on these expeditions nowadays, you know, with Wi-Fi and everything's on the internet, and you can do so much, and you can take a book with you and you can just do it. People aren't doing these kind of expeditions anymore.
I think they explore, they are connected too much to the computer,
yeah,
and they live vicariously, that's the term. And one has to live the life for really, and the real mm-hmm. experience, the actual experience of going down the river, going down the rapids, eating piranhas, fishing piranhas, getting bitten by spiders, by piranhas, and getting...
And I can say I've seen these pictures. So Mark showed me yesterday, they're real. So there's pictures of one of his team members, would you call him a team?
That's right.
A team member being bitten by a piranha, and then Mark himself being covered in bee stings, and including his eyes.
That's right.
So I don't think people are brave enough anymore. I think that in the comfort of their own home, they can just turn on the TV, watch a travel program, and they think that they know what it's like. But it's nothing compared to really experiencing it the way you did, is it?
You're absolutely right, Marina. I think if I look at Teddy Roosevelt, he had been twice the President of the United States. He was an enormous giant in the United States. And that in his 50s, he undertakes this adventure, this expedition, and he lives through it. He was left at some point, he was in such bad shape that he asked them to leave him behind to die in the jungle. And I look at myself and say, which president or former president in any country in the world would undertake this? So people, I think, in some respects, they were in the beginning of the 20th century more adventurous. Maybe it was an age of exploration. I don't know what it is, but...
Maybe they knew less about the risks, and because now we know more about the risks.
We know so much, and then we have access to so much information on the internet that we sometimes do not go to the actual site,
Am I right to say that your expedition wasn't just for the sake of following in his path? It was also a scientific expedition. Yes. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The Roosevelt-Rondon expedition was called Roosevelt-Rondon Scientific Expedition, 1914. He took with him a naturalist and an ornithologist, and they had geologists. So it was a scientific expedition, and they were exploring the river. So in the same way as his expedition was scientific, our expedition also had a scientific angle. I am a material scientist, and I have been studying materials for 40 years, and in the last years I studied biological materials, materials from nature. So we had two scientific objectives. Number one, to collect specimens for our biological research, which I did, and my students are studying. And second, to compare the changes in environmental changes and the social changes in the 100 years. So I think, and climate changes in the 100. So I think we had a strong scientific component to our expedition.
What was an example of something that you've seen that has changed in the past?
What has changed is that the lands of the Indians, the Nyambiquara Indians, that were also studied by Claude Lévi-Strauss in his classic book, Triste Tropique, and that was actually the structural anthropology. Those lands of the Indians were partially taken over by huge conglomerate, farming conglomerates, and they pushed the Indians out and they created mega farms, ultra-modern farms, just like in the American Midwest.
Yeah.
These are large corporations. But the Indians are extremely concerned. Every village we went to, they asked us the first thing, can you help us to protect our lands? Because they are afraid of further advances of the farmers.
And you feel helpless at that point, don't you?
I felt helpless, but I think I there are things we can do. And we can bring at least awareness of these dangers, because the Indians also have rights. And Rondon, who was the Brazilian hero who participated in the expedition, he always protected the rights of the Indians. And he said, we are the guests in the lands of the Indians. So where we went, where the Indian territories were, the lands are totally kept and exactly the same as before. But as we step out, we have mega farms and that are poisoning the lands with a lot of, how would they say, Roundup and the modern chemicals that are used in farming.
And what was the hardest part of your expedition?
The hardest part. We were in Nyambiquara territory, and this is four times the size of Luxembourg, with a population of only 600 people.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Here we have 500,000. Yeah. And then we were crossing. There was a place. We were following the telegraph line that was the trajectory that Roosevelt and Rondon took. So we went into the bush, into the badlands, and we could not advance, and we could not go back. We had to machete our way through. We were 2 days without water. We were attacked by bees. So at that point, that was a point where we felt, and we had no way to be extracted. We had no, unfortunately, no satellite phone. So we just had to machete our ways. We were able to make it through to the end, but we looked pretty haggard at the end.
Wow.
So I think that was the hardest part.
Wow, very, very interesting. Mark, I'm going to play one more song before I ask you a bit more about your expedition. Okay, so this is Sigma and Rita Ora, Coming Home. That was Sigma and Rita Ora with Coming Home, and you're listening to Ara City Radio. And this morning I'm joined by Marc-André Myers, who has done some very exciting stuff, and he is now here in Luxembourg to promote his new book, as well as tell us about his very exciting expedition in Latin America. Before the music, we were talking about the adventures and your hardest moments, Mark. Yesterday, you showed me the test that you did for a piranha bite. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes. The piranha, people think that piranhas have a very strong bite. But surprisingly, the calculations we did and also the experiments we conducted, we took a little apparatus that we took with us to the river, and then we stuck it in the piranha's mouth and then determined the force. The force was surprisingly low. I still have some doubts about it, but I think the key is in that the piranha has a very sharp teeth. So it's like a razor blade. If you have a very sharp razor blade, all you have to do is touch your face that it will cut. And the sharpness of the tooth is comparable to that of a very sharp knife.
Wow.
And there's a guillotine action also. That's what cuts it, you see, because animals with thicker hides, they can fall in the water, nothing happens to them. But when there is a cut, meaning there is an opening, they go for that opening.
And what other mammals, and did you see any animals and mammals that you wouldn't normally see? Did you see them on this journey?
Yes, we saw different animals, tapirs. We saw tapirs. We see a lot of fish, but the main thing that impresses me in this whole area, it's a universe of vegetation and insects. The insects are the major players. They rule the Amazon, insects of all sizes and shapes, and more than mammals, more than fish, more than anything else. What really gets you are the insects, mosquitoes of all sizes, bees of all sizes, ants of all sizes and shapes. They seem to rule the roost, so to speak.
It sounds like the perfect boy's adventure. I feel like it's a little boy's dream what you did. Have you always wanted to do something like this?
I always had this dream. I told you, I was born and raised in Brazil, and I always had this dream of the Amazon, Indians and things like this. So when I was 19 years old, I went to the Amazon on a Brazilian project called Rondon Project. I spent 2 months in the Amazon, and I told myself, I will go back one day. And this expedition was the opportunity. And we got very nice support by the Brazilian army. They helped us through this difficult time.
Oh, wow. So you had support from the military as well?
The military, yeah.
Do you have any advice for the young, adventure-hungry explorers like yourself?
Yes, I have. Prepare yourself well. Number two, form a good team. When the going gets tough, you need supportive partners. You don't need people that will go into your food and eat the food, your food, or people who will steal your water.
Yeah.
You need people that have a sense of community, of team. Mm-hmm. That is extremely important. If you don't have that, the expedition falls apart. Internal tensions can be extreme because people are under a lot of duress and of stress, and then the selfish gene takes over and some people start acting really strange.
Yeah, I feel like that's when people start eating each other, you know, when you're hungry.
Yeah,
and then that's what happens.
It could come to that. Yeah.
I remember I read a book when I was younger and it's called Lord of the Flies.
Yes,
and
that's a good example.
Exactly, yeah, and it's when they start eating each other.
Yes, and we passed the territory actually of the Cinta Larga Indians. Mm. And these Indians used to, they were cannibals even 30 to 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the chief did not allow us to go through it, but I heard rumors that they still every now and then grab some guy and then eat him for dinner. Yeah,
really eye-opening experience for you. Did it change you?
The expedition?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think it changed me in a sense that it gave me first an awareness of the greatness of Teddy Roosevelt, of his courage, of his determination, and of his Brazilian partner, Rondon, Cândido Rondon. The difficulty, it's easy to read it and to see it on a book, but to experience it, you really know the magnitude of their great challenges that they encountered.
Wow.
And the fact that I have overcome them, I have survived them, it gives me some type of, I think, a certain self-confidence, yeah.
I mean, I saw that self-confidence yesterday because Mark was wearing just a flannel shirt and it was snowing outside. And I said, after our meeting, I said, well, where are you off to now? And he said, oh, I'm going to walk to Bonnevoie. So he was going to walk about an hour through the city in just a flannel shirt in the snow. And I feel like that's, it gave you a kind of resilience, you know, that self-confidence carries you through. It's funny to see that today. So what brings you back to Luxembourg?
I love Luxembourg. I have deep emotional attachments to Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. As I told you, I was, when we were kids, we would come to Luxembourg every 2 years. My parents would dump us off in the farm in Oberfeuillen, and then they would come to the city to visit the family. So mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time in the farm in Oberfeuillen. I knew everything about cows, about the mush, about going to the fields, getting the potatoes and collecting. And so the farmer's life. And I always enjoyed it very much. And I have cousins across the street there. I have wonderful family here in Luxembourg, mm-hmm. the Lenz, George Lenz and Adrienne. And then I have a close network of family here. I have these Krombach, the Krombach of the cigarette factory, and I have an extended family here. And I feel a certain emotion every time I enter Luxembourg. There's something very special, you know.
I find that really touching because for those of you who don't know, Mark has really traveled the world and there's few places that he hasn't been. So the fact that you still feel so strongly about Luxembourg is really nice to hear. Do you feel, have you seen the changes in the last few years? What have you noticed?
Yes, I have noticed the globalization of Luxembourg. Luxembourg was, when I was growing up in Feuillen, there was two cafes there and the people would sit there sipping on their warm beer. And there was a Fritz and there was a Hans and there was a... it was very much isolated, and they would smoke their Marilyn cigarettes there. So what I see here is a huge change. The city of Luxembourg is now a global city. You see people from the whole world. That's a great thing because Luxembourg has risen and changed and transformed itself, mm-hmm. but it still is Luxembourg.
Yeah.
And that's the beautiful thing.
That's true. So why are you back this time, Mark? Why are you back in Luxembourg?
I'm back this time because we have the Walfer Bischadisch. That's the book fair of Walferdon. And I published a novel this year and about the pioneers, the Luxembourgish pioneers in Brazil, and how they opened the first modern steel plant, integrated steel plant in Brazil in the 1920s.
Okay.
And this is I wrote this novel in Brazil, published it in Brazil. It was called The Madam and the Luxembourger. And then it was translated by Sonia da Silva, who did a fantastic job, and it was published by Edition Saint-Paul, D'Amour et d'Acier. It was I came here for the launch for the launching, and now in the book fair it was I had to give a presentation. I gave a presentation on it at the book fair yesterday, and I had the autograph signing on Saturday. It was a very nice event. I am very happy with the press that I receive. And this is a book that is very close to my heart because it joins Luxembourg and Brazil.
And I can tell you it's a very interesting book. I heard a little bit about it yesterday. And we'll tell you more about it just after the traffic. Sweet, sweet loving, won't you? That was Sigala with Sweet Loving, and this morning you are listening to Ara City Radio. I'm Marina Lai, and I'm here with a special guest today, Marc-André Meyers, and he has written a very special book about Luxembourg, although he has written many books. And if you tuned in before the music and before the news, he was actually telling us about a very interesting expedition through Latin America. But now, Marc, we're going to ask you to tell us about your latest book.
Yes, this book that was just published, D'Amour et d'Acier, with Edition Saint-Paul, is a historical novel. I call it faction, mm-hmm. mixture of fiction and facts. And it's based on a character that is a pioneer, a Luxembourgish pioneer that went to Brazil in the 1920s. He was an engineer here. The name of the protagonist in the novel is Jacques Esch, but it's loosely based on Louis Esch. And he went to Brazil, and he was responsible for the establishment of the first integrated steel plant, modern steel plant in Latin America. It was a tremendous feat, especially coming from a small country like Luxembourg. Mm-hmm. He brought with him he was able to bring with him a group of 150 engineers and technicians. Arbet sent him there. At some point, Arbet was going to close the shop, and he refused to. He got funding in Brazil. He associated with very important Brazilian bankers, politicians, and he became a tremendous figure in Brazil. He has what made his pioneering work so interesting and the novel so interesting, that parallel to this industrial development and to all of his activities, there is a love story, a beautiful love story intermeshed. His love for Brazil, mm-hmm. and his love for a Brazilian woman that he met when he was in his 50s.
And you mentioned something that I found very interesting about this main character is he has a bit of a complex because of his upbringing and his background.
Right. That is the protagonist in the novel. He is the illegitimate son of a Belgian aristocrat and the maid. And so he always carried this weight within him and this desire to be on his own feet, to be somebody mm-hmm. great. And that I think we all are complex human beings, so sometimes our weaknesses become our strength. The things that hurt us become the things that make us struggle and strive and overcome them. And he did that in the most beautiful way. His love life, he did not have a conventional love life. He didn't marry or meet somebody at a young age. He was totally devoted to the steel industry. And then when he was in his 50s, he had what the French call un coup de foudre. Mm-hmm. He had a love affair that completely changed him and shook him in his foundations.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you think it was because he was so committed to doing something great with his life that he never dated until his 50s?
It's a mixture of things. I think he had feelings, and I'm talking about the character of the novel, not about the real person. I kind of mixed the two. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of research for the novel, and yeah. I went to Redange, where he's born. I went to the house where the people lived. I interviewed the waiter that served them in Brazil. I interviewed old professors, old engineers that had worked in the steel plant. I had heard rumors from my parents. So I assembled all these things, and I felt if I don't write this story, it will be lost in the sands of time, because the next generation will never have heard about this. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful story. It's sometimes sad, sometimes happy, but the strength, it shows that the strength of love can overcome many barriers. So in this respect, I mixed fact and fiction. But I think there was something in him, and people, there were rumors about him in mm-hmm. Brazil when he was younger, and people questioned, especially Brazilians, how come he never got girlfriends, how come this and that. Mm-hmm. There were some trauma in his life and in his soul, and suffering in his soul.
And we're very lucky that you've written this story, because you're right, if you hadn't, then the story would be lost. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you felt a certain innate responsibility to carry this story on so that people could know such a beautiful love story between two people. Do you feel like it's 90% true, or how true is it, do you think?
Okay. I have the anchor points, a number of anchor points in the mm-hmm. story that are true.
Okay.
But I introduce characters that there is a girl in the story that commits suicide. That girl actually existed, and she was my classmate in Brazil. She came back to Luxembourg and committed suicide.
Okay.
I introduce other characters that somewhat I twist a little bit, and I used, of course, the writer's freedom to adjust things and to imagine scenes. But mm-hmm. the important is the following. I think beyond the fact that it's this guy really do that, did that guy really do that? The important thing is that it's a homage to the pioneers of of Luxembourg that went to Brazil, sacrificed their lives. My father was among them. I know many of them among mm-hmm. them, and that created this modern steel plant. And now that Arbed has become Arcelor, Arcelor has become ArcelorMittal. Mm-hmm. And in Brazil, this Belgo Mineira was the name of the company, which started very small through the love and discipline of Luiz Zenge. That became also ArcelorMittal, and ArcelorMittal is the biggest steel company in Brazil now. So it is a tremendous success story. It is something great, mm-hmm. but one should not forget the roots, the small, simple roots.
And I feel like your book is a crucial part of yeah. that history yeah. of becoming what it is today, the steel industry becoming what it is today. Yeah. And what was the writing process like? What kind of research did you have to do? You talked a bit about interviewing the waiters.
Yeah. My father was an engineer, Henri Mayas. He was later on a director, a planning manager, and he knew Luiz Zenge very well. Mm-hmm. My mother knew his wife, Maria Cecilia, very well. Mm-hmm. And my mother, they were very close friends. My father never told me anything bad about Luiz Zenge or anything like this. But I'm a curious nature, and I always heard here, a little there. And I put the story together. And then as I gathered more and more information, everything fell into place. And so what I put down is to best of my knowledge, correct. Mm-hmm. I went to Redange. I went to the Hotel de Ville, to the mayor's, and I got this gentleman's birth certificate.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, his godfather was this aristocrat. So I said, oh, there's a connection there. And the way he was, and the way he portrayed.
You met him, right?
Met him as a child,
yeah.
because I had to give flowers to him. My brother and I, we were called to bring flowers to him, and he was like like the president of the United States, like the president. When he would come there, he and the prince, they would come, and he had a grandeur attached to him, and he had mm-hmm. a way with him. It had a certain elegance. So I was at his funeral also. He was buried in 1953. I was a little boy. I was 7 years old in school. The whole city stopped. The whole steel plant stopped. It was a tremendously dramatic situation. I was there, and I remember as if today, as his widow walking up the stairs mm-hmm. to the old cemetery, crying, and then the whole city crying because of this loss.
As you tell the story, I'm fascinated by the story of you, actually. I'm fascinated by the story of this little boy that saw this piece of history unfold before him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you were curious enough, the adventurer in you, went to pull all these pieces together to do the research, to construct this story. And you yourself, you are very interesting as a person, I think. And it's the fact that you were an observer, even from such a young age, you were already observing.
Yes, that comes the curiosity fact. I was always very curious, and I was always chastised for being too curious. But I think that is my nature. You see, I am always listening and watching and looking, and so this story, especially, and because it was fascinating to me, and I put the puzzle together, and I say, aha, and what I said, and then some people say, ah. They look at the details. They say, well, this guy didn't do that. This guy didn't do that. But one has to look at the big picture. What does mm-hmm. the story portray? The tribulations and the triumph of a great Luxembourger. That's what it is. And the love that he found in his life.
And do you feel like being curious makes you a good writer? Because I think what's interesting about Mark is that you are an engineer, a scientist, but you are also a creative person, and that curiosity draws parallels in both subjects. And do you think that's the success to your writing?
I think so. I think that in science, I have been, I would say, fairly successful in science and in research. And I think I have this curiosity, and I take risks in science. And one has to take risks. Sometimes you see something, you make assumptions. And I also have this approach, and that also carries over. I It comes from my mother's side. I tell a little story if I have time.
Of course you may.
And it was, I'll tell the little story. It's a beautiful little story. But my grandmother, and she's from Oberfeulen, and my grandfather, they were farmers. And my grandfather, once he was plowing the fields in Kochach Plateau, mm-hmm. and he found a Roman tomb with a huge urn full of coins. So he took it home, all these Roman coins, a huge amount of them. And they sat there, they looked at this treasure, and they said, no, we cannot, we this is not belong to us. We have to give this to the Grand Duchesse. Mm-hmm. So then my grandmother, who had a literary talent, she always would write at school. She was a little bit bohemian, a little bit literate. She wrote beautifully. And she wrote this letter to the Grand Duchesse, and then sent the coins to them. So a few weeks later, my mother was at the window in Foylen at the house. So she sees this car or whatever thing, a horse-drawn buggy coming in. Mm-hmm. And she ran to the kitchen and said, Mommy, there is somebody there, very important. And then my grandmother came, and she was wearing an apron. She came to the door, opened the door, and when she looked, she said, oh, my God, Prince Felix, what are you doing here? You came because of the coins. And he said, no, madame, I came because of the letter. Because wow. This beautiful letter, how can somebody in the fields, in a farm, yeah. write such a beautiful letter? So she had this talent, and I think a little bit of this talent was passed on to me as a gift, but it's also an obligation I have to make something of it, right?
I think often those who are gifted like yourself, they feel this responsibility yeah. to do something with it, and yeah. that's great. You know, you don't just want to sit there thinking, you know, I can write, but I yeah. don't want to write. And you spoke to me off air before saying that you've always, despite your studies, and you've written 400 scientific papers, but you feel this yearning to write.
Yes.
And do you prefer fiction or do you prefer to write factual things?
I as a young person, as a kid, I had a mentor, Padre Enriquez, who was a priest who had played a role. He really encouraged me to become a writer. He said, Mark, you have the soul of the poet and the discipline of a writer. And I did not have neither nor, but I had this little dream in my mind that voice telling me. So my father said, my son, go into engineering, you'll always get a job. Later on, you can write, which is true to a certain extent. But when I reached a certain point in my life, that voice kept coming back. Mark, you have to get back to writing. And I, at some time, and then I took my pen again, mm-hmm. and I started writing very imperfectly at first. But then I worked, and it's a craft like any other craft, like digging holes or putting walls together or tiling. Because yeah. you have to work at it. The more you work at it, the better you become. Yeah,
great. Okay, I'm going to play one more song and then we'll finish off and ask you just a little bit more about your book and your writing. Thank you, Mark. Jack Garrett. Good morning, you're listening to Ara City Radio 102.9 and 105.2. You're listening to Marina, and I am here with Mark Andre Myers, who has been telling us about his recent expeditions, and he has also been introducing his latest book, which is written in French. But Mark, am I right to believe that there will be an English one to follow?
Marina, I promise.
Okay.
And I will not forget your encouragement. I think that I will have an English version. It will be called The Madam and the Luxembourger.
Okay, perfect. And this current edition, the French one, it's available all over Luxembourg?
Yes, it's Edition Saint-Paul. It's one of the main publishers in Luxembourg. And I think Libo, the Luxembourger Wort group, and I other bookstores carry it also. Or you can get it online also.
Okay. And just can you remind people the name of the book in French?
Yes, it's D'Amour et d'Acier. Edition Saint-Paul, 2015. It was translated beautifully by Sonia da Silva.
Okay. Right, Mark. So You've told us a lot about writing and how you came to write this and stuff. Do you have advice for writers who are trying to make it?
I have some advice. Yesterday, I came here because of the Valfa Bishadish, the book fair of Valfa Dosh, and I was there Saturday and yesterday, and I was inspired. I saw a little boy, he's 14 years of age, he had his books there, he has two books, mm-hmm. and there was another boy, he was like 10 years of age, he was talking to the publisher, to Wolf there at Edition Saint Paul, and these little young boys already have this ambition. So I would say, advice for a writer, you have to find your voice, you have to find your voice and follow your voice. Mm-hmm. And then the other advice I have, write. And that is a simple advice, but it takes discipline. You get up in the morning, you say, I'm going to reserve 1 hour every day, find some hole in your room, in your house there, mm-hmm. completely isolate yourself, turn off the computer, everything, and then sit down and look at a blank piece of paper. And somehow inspiration will come to you. You'll write, and then the next day you read it, and then it will be horrible. And then you rewrite it will be so-so. And then you rewrite again. It's like a gem that you're polishing. And then get advice, join book clubs, writers' clubs, and there is a lot of networking. Take a class in writing, learn the trade, learn the craft. That's very important. And find groups that encourage you. And then especially these writers' clubs, because every week they have to get together and they have to bring a chapter. And then you're forced to, because it's like a peer pressure. So, and I wish you all writers and potential writers great success. Luxembourg is amazing, the amount of intellectual activity. I was so impressed by the book fair yesterday in Val Fadoche. Mm-hmm.
And there's so many bookshops all over Luxembourg City as well. You know, given it's such a small place, I was surprised that there are at least 5 or 6 bookshops. How long did it take you to finish this book?
This book here, I would say, it took quite a number of years. I would say 8 years, but in the middle of that time, I wrote 2 other novels that I wrote in English, and I'll send them to you. It's not like, because I wrote it, I put it aside, and I couldn't find a publisher, and then I found a publisher in Brazil. It's a huge struggle to find a good publisher, too. I would mm-hmm. say also, to find a reputable and a serious publisher is nowadays a huge challenge, because there's tremendous pressure. And I was very fortunate, both in Brazil with Editora Record and here with Edition Saint Paul. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for coming in, Mark. And I also wanted to thank Ken and Anik, because they are my good friends who put me in touch with Mark. And if it wasn't for them, then I would never have heard such an interesting story, both about the expedition and your book. For those of you who have just tuned in, I just wanted to give you a quick recap about the book. And it's about a Luxembourg and Brazilian love story between an aristocrat and a madam. Is that how we call it? Yes.
I guess you can say
that. And a madam. And the story is very, very interesting. It's facts with some fiction added to it. And I think that's always nice, because you learn things about history, but you also get to indulge in a bit of fiction as well. And I think Mark is a very interesting person. And you can find out more about him on his website, which is
markmyers.org.
So that's M-A-R-C, Myers, M-Y-E-R-S.
M-E-Y-E-R-S.
And can we play a song for you, Mark, to thank you for coming on today? What would you like me to play
for
you?
Well, I'd like to get an old Beatles song, and Yesterday.
Okay, of course we can do that for you. Thank you so much for coming on our City Radio.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Luxembourg, for being always there and being the anchor in my life. Okay.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know. She yesterday. Love was such an easy game to play. I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why she had to go, I don't know. She wouldn't say. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. I need a place to hide away.